Chapter 5. A Wedding Ring or a Honeymoon? Our province still remains unprovided with that efficient and continuous steam service which was guaranteed by the Articles of Confederation. Speech from the Throne opening the Prince Edward Island Legislature, March 6, 1884.
If the Prime Minister is interested in preserving Confederation, he's going to have to change the attitudes of the federal government towards this province. They seem to regard the province as a young bride, asking us to choose between a wedding ring and a honeymoon. Alex Campbell commenting to journalists about rumored causeway cancellation, October 11, 1968.
Prior to Alex Campbell, Prince Edward Island's longest-serving premier was W.W. Sullivan, who led a conservative government from 1879 to 1889. Sullivan was an irrepressible advocate for better terms in federal-provincial dealings, notably for Canada to live up to constitutional promises of efficient steam service for the conveyance of mails and passengers, and continuous communication with the intercolonial railway and the railway system of the Dominion. These were central features of the 1873 Order in Council that brought Prince Edward Island into Confederation. A primary factor behind PEI's decision not to join in 1867 had been the reality that the island was cut off from the rest of Canada for at least 4 months per year as a result of winter ice conditions. Frustrated by the failure of the federal government to live up to what became known as the Communications Clause, Sullivan went to London in 1886 to petition Queen Victoria, but was rebuffed by a memorandum from the Privy Council contending that Canada could only provide, quote, what science and experience might determine as the best and most efficient within the range of possibility. With the establishment of a year-round car ferry service in 1917, PEI's expectations for continuous communications were temporarily met, although debates continued about the adequacy of the service. The 1941 wreck of the SS Charlottetown off the coast of Nova Scotia, while en route to dry dock for her annual spring inspection, was a major setback, which was not alleviated until the introduction of the MV Abiquit in 1947. By the mid-1950s, two developments returned transportation linkages between PEI and the mainland to the front burner. The first was the 1955 opening of the Canso Causeway, connecting Cape Breton Island with the Nova Scotia mainland. A second and ongoing impetus was increased shipping by both truck and rail that came with post-war prosperity, together with growth in motor vehicle travel by Prince Edward Island residents and visitors. The fragility of the situation was underscored and the constitutional argument highlighted by a 1950 railway strike that disrupted service on the crossing between Borden PEI and Cape Tormentine, New Brunswick. These factors prompted Premier Alex Matheson, following the 1955 election, to request that the federal government undertake a feasibility study of a causeway between Prince Edward Island and New Brunswick. By the time Alex Campbell became premier in 1966, supporting the causeway was a badge of honor among Prince Edward Island politicians. It was referred to in the platforms of both parties in the 1966 election, although it did not become a focal point of the campaign. The causeway had become a make-weight, something that politicians were obliged to support, but which did not tip the balance. In the 1959 election, Walter Shaw had declared the Conservatives to be the party of the causeway. On the eve of the 1962 federal election, John Diefenbaker announced that the causeway would be built at a projected cost of $105 million. 3 years later, in anticipation of a 1965 federal campaign, the Pearson government called tenders on initial phases of the causeway, announcing that the projected cost had increased to $148 million. 3 days before the vote, Liberal Cabinet Minister J. Watson McNaught staged a partisan photo opportunity in Cape Tormentine, to much criticism and little avail. All four Prince Edward Island federal ridings elected Conservative MPs. The federal Liberals trailed the causeway in front of PEI voters again during the 1966 provincial election, issuing a tender call for the approach roads on the PEI side on May 19th, 11 days before the vote, and scheduling a conference on causeway construction for 2 days after the first King's deferred election. Neither announcement garnered more than perfunctory attention. For Alex Campbell, who was elected on a platform of free school books, enhanced pensions, and above all, fresh leadership, the causeway had not been a critical issue. That would change. Within 48 hours of becoming premier-elect, Campbell took part in the federally sponsored Causeway Conference, at which detailed plans for a combined Causeway Bridge Tunnel, to be known as the Northumberland Strait Crossing, were unveiled. Public Works Minister George McElraith and senior federal officials and consultants shared a wealth of information about the project. McElraith told a reporter that he got the impression that a lot of islanders do not believe the Strait Crossing will ever be constructed, prompting the reporter to comment parenthetically, "This is a shrewd and entirely correct impression." In his July 19th Capital Beat column, Hartwell Daly commented, "Mr. McElraith could not quite understand why anyone would have doubts. It might be said that very few who were present for the one-day session were left with many doubts. The work is on, and that's that."
The 1966 Ferry Workers' Strike.
The second and more compelling event that moved the Northumberland Strait Crossing up in the PEI government's priorities was a strike in August 1966 by ferry workers on the PEI New Brunswick Crossing. By late July, it was apparent that national contract negotiations between Canadian National Railways and four railway unions were not going well. Most of the staff on the CN-operated ferry service belonged to the Canadian Brotherhood of Railway, Transport and General Workers, which was seeking wage increases approximately double the 18% spread over 2 years that had been recommended by a conciliation board. With the union set to be in a strike position by the end of the month, Campbell sent an August 12th telegram to Federal Transport Minister J.W. Pickersgill, expressing PEI's concern about suspension of the ferry service. Campbell noted the potential impact on travelers at the end of the peak tourist season and on livestock shipments, which were being redirected to mainland packing plants due to a strike at Canada Packers in Charlottetown. Campbell emphasized the national government's constitutional responsibilities and urged Pickersgill and the federal government to consider measures that would either exempt the ferry service from a national railway strike or mitigate the effects of a work stoppage. On August 24th, the federal cabinet debated the potential ferry stoppage at length. They gave consideration to measures such as using Hercules aircraft from the Department of National Defense to relay traffic and possibly deploying crews from the Coast Guard to provide emergency ferry service. In the end, Cabinet decided to not take any steps that might be construed as strike-breaking. Prime Minister Pearson summarized the discussion by proposing that, before acting in the matter, the government, quote, should allow enough time to pass for expressions of public opinion to be felt by the local labor leaders. Cabinet discussed the PEI ferry situation again on August 26th, the first day of the strike, deciding that there should be a strong appeal from either the Minister of Labour or the Minister of Transport to the workers in Borden to return to work. The closest the Cabinet discussion came to acknowledging the federal constitutional obligation was a note to the effect that it was proposed that because it was acting in recognition of its constitutional responsibility, the government should involve the Prince Edward Island members of Parliament in whatever course of action it adopted. At the August 24th Cabinet meeting, Transport Minister Pickersgill had noted that Premier Campbell was considering declaring an emergency under the province's Civil Defence Act. Pickersgill was recorded as proposing that, rather than permit resort to this legislation, which was probably unconstitutional, the minister was exploring with his officials the possibility of operating the smallest of the ferries with railway supervisory personnel or with Department of Transport employees. Pickersgill's constitutional opinions notwithstanding, the Prince Edward Island government invoked the Emergency Measures Act, establishing a coordinating committee to organize and expedite travel, including through a freshly created reservation system on the second crossing between Wood Islands, PEI, and Caribou, Nova Scotia. The emergency measures were successful, with only 60 vehicles left at the Wood Islands terminal after the first day of the strike, and all traffic accommodated on Saturday and Sunday. When the CBRT members agreed to resume work after being on strike for 5 days, and with the prospect of Parliament enacting back-to-work legislation, the Borden-Cape Tormentine ferries travelled at less than capacity. What this really proved was that the uncertainty of the ferry service had its own power to discourage people from travelling or from doing business. For PEI's freshly minted Premier Campbell, the 1966 ferry strike left a searing impression that the constitutional promise of continuous communication wasn't worth much without energetic advocacy and initiative from Prince Edward Island. Campbell was praised by PEI and mainland editorial writers for his handling of the ferry strike. The Halifax Chronicle Herald commented, "Premier Alex Campbell is to be congratulated on his skill and finesse in allowing the men time to resume work voluntarily." The Journal Pioneer wrote in an editorial, "The Campbell government is to be commended for the promptness with which it has tackled the problem." The editorial was more sanguine about the role of the federal government, saying, "As far as we could tell, Mr. Pearson and his associates, including Transport Minister Pickersgill, were totally indifferent to the fact that our ferries were tied up for 5 days. Apart from putting it on the agenda of a cabinet meeting, and this may well have been a fiction, there was not a boo out of the government on the subject. As for the likelihood that anything could be done to avoid such a disruption in the future, the editorial was skeptical that the federal government would be moved to act." Regarding Premier Campbell, the editorial said, "Unfortunately, the province has no actual power in the matter, but it can use its influence, its prestige, and in the present circumstances, its political affiliations, to force Ottawa to do something. This it has done, and Ottawa is now on the spot. If Premier Campbell can stir up any action, he will surprise us, but he deserves high marks for trying." On September 6, 1966, Premier Campbell wrote to Prime Minister Pearson, proposing that rail and car ferries be removed from the trusteeship arrangement with CN and operated by the Department of Transport. As alternatives, Campbell proposed that a federal Crown corporation be established for the sole purpose of operating the ferries, or that the ferries might be transferred to a Prince Edward Island Crown corporation, with the proviso that, in no event would this latter suggestion relieve the federal government of its obligation. Pearson acknowledged Campbell's letter on September 22nd, stating that he had asked the Ministers of Labour and Transport to examine the entire situation. The subsequent exchanges of memos within the Federal Public Service are a case study of inaction and indifference, summarized in an October 4th letter from Minister of Labour John R. Nicholson to Prime Minister Pearson, which advised, "It seems to me that the fact that we have had only 2 brief interruptions in ferry service to Prince Edward Island in the past 16 years, and none that can be recalled prior to 1950, does not appear sufficient cause for venturing into arrangements which might be less favourable."
The Causeway Crusade.
The 1966 ferry strike underscored Prince Edward Island's vulnerability to being cut off from the mainland and raised the priority of the Northumberland Strait crossing. However, as the strategic importance of the crossing increased, so did its projected price. In June 1967, bids on the first phase of the project came in, and they were much higher than expected. By the fall of 1967, federal officials were suggesting the cost could exceed $300 million, although no realistic case was ever made for costs surpassing $200 million. The federal government brought in Colonel Edward Churchill, who had led the construction at Expo 67, to coordinate the project. Churchill became an enthusiastic champion of the benefits of the causeway. He told the Charlottetown Board of Trade in October 1967, "As a Canadian project, the crossing will rank with construction of the St. Lawrence Seaway." According to Churchill, the economics of the project were manageable, with costs being recovered in 50 years through savings and revenues. He said that the benefits to the PEI and Canadian economies would be enormous. He told the Board of Trade, "I am tempted to believe that there can be no real improvement in income and standards of living on the island unless easy and continuous access to markets is arranged." Churchill had greater concerns about technical aspects of the project, noting the challenges of building in the ocean and commenting that the engineering issues presented by the fixed link were greater than those encountered at the Churchill Falls power development in Labrador. As Colonel Churchill and teams of consultants and officials considered the feasibility and evolving design of the project, federal politicians continued to express confidence. Finance Minister Mitchell Sharp assured a Charlottetown Liberal meeting in July, "The causeway will be built," while defending the government's ongoing study of the situation, saying, "No responsible government would have proceeded without a reappraisal in light of the unexpectedly high bids." In October, Public Works Minister George McElraith described a Toronto Star report that the rail line would be deleted from the crossing to achieve savings as being entirely without foundation. The most telling sign of federal wavering came during the 1968 federal election, when Prime Minister Trudeau declined a promise that the fixed link would be constructed, even when asked directly by journalists during a June campaign visit to Prince Edward Island. After the election, the uncertainty mounted. In early September, Premier Campbell sent Trudeau a telegram outlining PEI's transportation problems, which would be exacerbated by the imminent withdrawal from service of the SS Prince Edward Island from the Borden Cape Tormentine run. CN had decided that it was not feasible to overhaul the ferry that had first been launched in 1914. Fortunately, the John Hamilton Gray was under construction. Trudeau acknowledged Campbell's telegram in two sentences, the second of which read inscrutably, "The matter is receiving our urgent attention." In late September, the federal government presented revised overall spending estimates with a view to post-election belt-tightening. They did not include any new allocations for the causeway. Public Works Minister Arthur Lang gave assurances that an announcement was coming within 2 or 3 weeks. The Maritime Provinces Board of Trade and Prince Edward Island's MPs joined the provincial government in pressuring Lang and the federal government for a response to Colonel Churchill's report. Alex Campbell claimed optimism in the face of rumours that the project had already been cancelled. In early October, the Toronto Star reported, citing federal sources, that plans for the PEI New Brunswick crossing had been scrapped due to budget cuts and that Premier Campbell had been informed 10 days previously. Campbell called a press conference to declare that he was most disturbed and angry about the report and that this was either irresponsible journalism or misrepresentation by federal officials who were trying to scuttle the project. Campbell suggested that Prime Minister Trudeau might recommend to federal civil servants that they pay attention to their own duties and leave the decision-making process to the federal cabinet where it belongs. Campbell gave vent to his annoyance with an uncharacteristically heated comment by saying, "If the Prime Minister is interested in preserving Confederation, he is going to have to change the attitudes of the federal government toward this province." When asked by journalists about reports that Ottawa was putting the squeeze on him, Campbell shot back, "If the federal government has any notion of squeezing Premier Alexander Campbell on this project, they will clearly learn that flexed muscles don't squeeze easily." Campbell wired Prime Minister Trudeau to ask for a top-level meeting to be attended by the entire provincial cabinet, at which Prince Edward Island would, in Campbell's words, make its own views clearly and forcefully known. In preparation for the Ottawa meetings, Campbell invited briefs from community and economic groups in support of the need for the causeway. These were presented at an enthusiastic public hearing held at the Charlottetown Hotel on October 17th, with 14 submissions from boards of trade, labor groups, representatives of the agricultural, fisheries, and tourism sectors, plus transportation and construction associations. Conservative Party leader George Key presented a brief, and former Premier Walter Shaw declared, "We want every citizen of PEI to be behind the Premier and what he is trying to develop here today." Heath Macquarie appeared on behalf of PEI's 4 Progressive Conservative MPs. Some observers began to refer to the high energy advocacy effort as the Causeway Crusade. Campbell commented that it was heartwarming to see the visible evidence of a great deal of thought and preparation, and added that the briefs and public hearing would emphatically counter accusations of local apathy toward the project. Campbell went further to call upon all islanders to rally behind the representations to be made formally in Ottawa, so that this province, along with other provinces in the region, presents a unified regional front in demanding that our constitutional rights be served. Campbell and his full cabinet, except Keir Clark, who remained on PEI as acting premier, travelled to Ottawa for an October 28th luncheon meeting at 24 Sussex Drive with Prime Minister Trudeau, who was joined by Arthur Lang and Jean Marchand. The premier presented an 18-page brief. After observing that in recent weeks PEI had been bombarded with press reports emanating from government spokesmen or official informants, suggesting a choice between the fixed crossing and the comprehensive development plan, Campbell said, "Let it be clearly stated that the government of Prince Edward Island does not accept such a choice." He emphasized that the Northumberland Strait crossing was a matter of constitutional responsibility of the federal government, while the development plan was a joint federal-provincial agreement.
The constitutional case for a permanent transportation link between Prince Edward Island and the mainland must begin with the fact of Prince Edward Island as a province within the Canadian Confederation. It is small in size, it is tiny in population, but nevertheless it is a province, vested with all the constitutional rights and privileges, the duties and responsibilities of all other provinces. Constitutionally, the matter of transportation between provinces is a responsibility of the federal government. It was recognized as such in the terms of union by which Prince Edward Island joined the Canadian Confederation in 1873. We are grateful for the many benefits Confederation has bestowed on the people of our province. We are proud to be Canadians. We intend to make our contribution to the Confederation of tomorrow. But Prince Edward Islanders are disillusioned and disappointed by the continued reluctance of the federal government to honor the spirit of the letter of the Terms of Union by which they became Canadians. They do not claim a permanent link with the mainland as an example of federal largesse or a handout. They claim, as a matter of constitutional commitment, backed by solid economic facts, which will act not only in their interests, but in the national interest as well.
Building on the 14 briefs submitted in Charlottetown 10 days previously, Campbell painted a rosy picture of the economic benefits of the fixed crossing to Prince Edward Island and to the Maritime Region and to Canada. The existing ferry service, by contrast, was hopelessly inadequate to serve current needs, not to mention the traffic in both people and goods that could be envisaged with a permanent crossing. A study by the Stanford Research Institute was cited in support of the suggestion that Prince Edward Island could accommodate 3.6 million visitors annually, far beyond the capacity of any imaginable ferry service. Campbell concluded by requesting Prime Minister Trudeau to call tenders within the month so that construction could resume by the spring of 1969. Following the luncheon at 24 Sussex Drive, Campbell and his cabinet visited the House of Commons, where they sat in the Speaker's Gallery. Prime Minister Trudeau drew attention to their presence, referring to the historic bonds between Prince Edward Island and the rest of Canada, and indicated enigmatically that he hoped that discussions with the PEI government would lead to another kind of bond. The visitors were also welcomed by MP Angus MacLean. The four PEI Conservative MPs were active in urging other Atlantic members of Parliament to lobby in favour of the causeway. The main item on the House of Commons agenda was debate concerning the previous day's federal budget, which featured a $600 million deficit and a 2% increase in personal income taxes. Opposition leader Robert Stanfield was shocked by the deficit and described the overall economic situation as a mess. Alex Campbell and his cabinet ministers spent the afternoon in meetings with ministers and officials and completed the day with a modestly attended press conference at the National Press Centre. A Canadian press report described Campbell as encouraged to come away with assurances that the promised Northumberland Strait crossing hadn't been scuppered, and with expectations that the federal government would make a decision on the project by mid-November.
Federal Cabinet Deliberations.
Between November 1968 and March 1969, the federal cabinet discussed the PEI situation on at least five occasions. The most intensive discussions took place on December 5th and December 12th, when a decision was reached. The remaining 3 months following December 12th were spent attempting, without success, to implicate Alex Campbell in the choice that had been made. At the December 5th cabinet meeting, Rural Development Minister Jean Marchand presented the proposed development plan, which by this time had been assessed and considered by two cabinet committees. Public Works Minister Arthur Lang was a weak advocate for the causeway. Lang spoke instead about the previous evening's broadcast of The Public Eye on the CBC and complained about Del Gallagher's faulty interpretation of the development plan and the federal role. Solicitor General George McElraith regretted that the development plan had not been assessed jointly with the proposed causeway and asked that the matter be deferred for a week. Justice Minister John Turner expressed satisfaction with the factual assessment of both projects and voiced the view that improvement of the existing ferry service was economically sounder than the building of a causeway. Turner felt that government could not afford to support both projects and that the commitment to do something about regional disparity was a binding one. Prime Minister Trudeau agreed with Turner's summation, suggesting that cabinet should give detailed attention as soon as possible to its philosophy and basic objectives in regional development. Trudeau said,
it might be useful to have the Premier of PEI on record as favoring either the FRED plan or the Causeway proposal, since the federal authority could not support both projects. The closest the October 28th Causeway Crusade came to entering into the December 5th cabinet discussion was an assertion by Jean Marchand that his officials, as a result of their meeting with the PEI cabinet, were under the impression that none of the provincial ministers believed that a causeway would be built in the near future. When cabinet took the matter up again on December 12th, Jean Marchand reported that he had spoken with Premier Campbell. Marchand said that he had asked Campbell to choose between the two projects, but that the Premier had refused, as was to be expected. Marchand then went on to argue for the FRED development plan, pointing out that anything but an endorsement would affect the credibility of his department in its first major regional development project since the election. Prime Minister Trudeau picked up on Marchand's report on the conversation with Premier Campbell and noted that it would be important to indicate that the provincial government had been consulted and had been asked to make a choice between the two projects. Solicitor General George McElraith made it clear that he was a strong proponent of the causeway as the only chance for economic recovery of the island. McElraith said that no system of ferries could do the job, concluding, eventually the federal government would have to honour its obligations under the Confederation Agreement. Transportation Minister Paul Hellyer expressed the view that the causeway would have to be built someday, although perhaps not until the 1970s or 1980s. Hellyer predicted that the economic effects would be greater than anyone suspected, as indeed has been the case whenever a new major transportation artery has been built. Hellyer expressed skepticism about regional development, saying that it was rooted more in political interest than in demonstrable economic advantage. He characterized the cost of the comprehensive development plan as ridiculously high, and said that the extension of the development plan to Nova Scotia, Newfoundland, and New Brunswick would be unavoidable. Minister of Fisheries Jack Davis followed to argue in favour of regional development, with the proviso that the basic question for the government to consider was the use of national resources to make the labour force more mobile. Hellyer agreed with Davis, making the case that regional development would recognise the reality of urbanisation and favour not eight growth centres but one or two urban centres, citing the example of Newfoundland. Jean Marchand joined in to say that he did not vastly disagree with Hellyer, observing that the Prince Edward Island FRED plan was, in Marchand's words, not really an accurate reflection of his view of what the new Department of Regional Development should be doing. He concluded that the development plan had been inherited from the previous government and had already been reduced from a federal contribution of $174 million to $125 million. Marchand argued that government had no choice but to go ahead, as to cancel would be a major decision. Thus, cabinet came to an unenthusiastic endorsement of the Prince Edward Island Development Plan. Prime Minister Trudeau summarized the discussion and said, "It seemed to be the consensus of cabinet from this and previous meetings that, while making it clear that the provincial government had been consulted, the federal government should announce that because it could not do both projects, it had decided to delay the causeway and proceed with the FRED project."
Putting the squeeze on Campbell.
As Prime Minister Trudeau indicated at the December 5th cabinet meeting, it was in the federal interest to have Premier Campbell on record as preferring either the causeway or the development plan. Discussions between PEI and Ottawa, most of them directly involving Campbell, went on through December and into January. Campbell did not relent in his insistence that the causeway and the development plan were separate matters, and in his refusal to be drawn into making a choice. On December 30th, Public Works Minister Arthur Lang told the federal cabinet that it was advisable for government to shortly announce its intention not to proceed with the causeway. Lang noted that the continuing costs of the consulting services were running at approximately $500,000 per month. Prime Minister Trudeau commented that a final decision had been delayed because of the refusal of the government of Prince Edward Island to accept the proposed FRED program as an alternative to the construction of the causeway. Trudeau went on to indicate that the Minister of Rural Development was negotiating a final offer with Premier Campbell, and if it were not acceptable, there was a possibility that construction of the causeway would have to be considered again. As Alex Campbell prepared to take part in a First Minister's Conference on Constitutional Renewal in Ottawa in early February, the federal spending estimates were released. They showed no provision for continued work on the causeway after March 31, 1969. From his room at the Chateau Laurier, Campbell sent a sharply worded telegram to Trudeau, protesting the omission. Trudeau responded with a firm but diplomatic telegram saying, "The reason why our estimates do not make provision for work on the causeway to PEI is, as you know, that there are higher priorities for the economic development of the island." After laying out the federal government's commitment to the development plan, Trudeau went on to say in his telegram, "It is my firm hope that with the federal resources which we are willing to make available on a scale that is very large indeed in relation to the population of the province, an effective effort will be undertaken for the development of Prince Edward Island and the improvement of the living standards of its people." Trudeau and Campbell followed with an amicable telephone conversation, with both holding to their positions. In his opening address at the First Minister's Conference, Campbell said that the temptation was great to raise economic concerns critical to our province. He chose instead to address the broader question of constitutional review. Campbell spoke in support of recognizing equality and language rights in the Constitution, relating his views on constitutional renewal to the national importance of combating regional economic inequality. He emphasized the need for a strong central government and acknowledged the constitutional review process would be complex and time-consuming, saying, "Our founding fathers in Charlottetown and Quebec City had a relatively simple task. We are now 11 jurisdictions, each with a measure of sovereignty and each with well-established traditions." Campbell waited until the third day of the conference to demand that the federal government live up to its promise to construct a permanent crossing. Near the end of what was otherwise a fractious conference, Campbell received an appreciative laugh from his colleagues, including Prime Minister Trudeau, when he said, "Failure to provide such a work would be regarded by the people of Prince Edward Island as highway robbery." Campbell went on to emphasize the constitutional character of the obligation to build the causeway and to predict that it would cost Canadian taxpayers $1 billion to provide the ferry service for 60 years into the future, as compared with $160 million to build the permanent crossing. Beside Campbell, as he spoke, was his predecessor Walter Shaw, invited by the Premier to join the PEI delegation to reinforce the argument and notably to corroborate that the causeway had been promised by Prime Ministers Diefenbaker and Pearson in 1962 and 1965. Campbell had a subsidiary purpose for inviting Shaw to join him at the conference, to preempt criticism that the province's case had not been adequately presented. On March 5th, Prime Minister Trudeau made a statement to the House of Commons unveiling the federal government's financial commitment to the 15-year Comprehensive Development Plan. Trudeau's statement included a commitment to improve ferry services, adding parenthetically, "The government should have liked to have been able to assist at the same time in the construction of a causeway. However, there is a limitation to the resources of Canada, and a decision therefore had to be made fixing the priorities of expenditure." The parenthetical comment about the causeway captured the headlines and the brunt of opposition queries. Jean Marchand, frustrated by the continuing attention paid to the causeway and still wishing to corner Campbell, proposed to a March 6th cabinet meeting that he make a statement in the House for the purpose of clarifying certain misunderstandings which had arisen with regard to the causeway and the FRED program for PEI, particularly as regards Premier Campbell's role in the choice that had been made between these two alternatives. After discussion, Cabinet concluded that it would be inadvisable to make the statement, as it would only feed the fires of debate, and that there would be ample opportunity to clarify the situation as regards the Premier. On the evening of March 6th, Marchand and Tom Kent traveled to Charlottetown for the March 7th signing ceremony for the Comprehensive Development Plan. In a preparatory meeting with Alex Campbell and provincial officials at the Kirkwood Motel, Marchand and Kent demanded again that Campbell publicly indicate support for the cancellation of the causeway in exchange for the development plan. Campbell responded that PEI's position was clear, and if this were a federal requirement, the signing ceremony might have to be cancelled. He then said that he was going out to the parking lot for a smoke. By the time Campbell and the provincial officials returned, Marchand and Kent recognized that they had no option but to drop the issue. At the signing ceremony the following day, Marchand's comments were brief, unscripted, and seemingly awkward, not in keeping with the historic significance of the occasion,
and in contrast with Prime Minister Trudeau's remarks at the signing of the Gaspé Bay Agreement in May 1968. Marchand's performance may have reflected disappointment that he and Tom Kent were returning to Ottawa without their quarry, or, in light of his comments about the development plan at the December 12th cabinet meeting, that his heart really wasn't in it. When asked by a journalist following the signing about comments he was reported to have made about Premier Campbell agreeing to sacrifice the causeway, Marchand responded with a terse denial that he had made any such comment. Prince Edward Island journalist Neil Matheson, writing in the Globe and Mail, termed Marchand's performance that day weak and unconvincing. Matheson noted that the Canadian press, which originally reported Marchand's comments, had not been asked for a correction.
Political implications and commitments.
In political terms, Alex Campbell emerged unscathed from 8 months of federal pressure tactics, perhaps even with his standing enhanced. In a Globe and Mail commentary reporting that the causeway cancellation had engendered hostility on PEI, Neil Matheson noted that some of the strongest conservative critics of Ottawa's decision felt that the attempt to crucify Campbell, as Matheson termed it, had likely won him sympathy. A Journal Pioneer editorial cast the matter as a contest between Trudeau and Campbell, predicting that Campbell would benefit politically.
There are a lot of Liberals who have come to believe that Trudeau is giving Premier Campbell a hard time, and they don't like it. They have a strong personal loyalty and affection for Alex, as they refer to him, and they believe he is doing his best to give the province good government and to come up with plans to improve its economy. And they are reluctantly coming to the conclusion that all his efforts are being stymied by the obstinacy of Prime Minister Trudeau, who is rapidly becoming a sort of villain in the developing political drama.
While the predictions about Alex Campbell's electoral prospects would turn out to be accurate, the skirmishing over the causeway did not hurt the relationship between Campbell and Trudeau. They remained respectful and good-natured during more than a decade that they served together as Premier and Prime Minister. Campbell's views about renewing the Constitution and about the importance of a strong central government largely coincided with those of Trudeau. In dealing with a multitude of federal-provincial issues, Campbell and Trudeau were both wily, and they respected that in each other. For Alex Campbell, the repeated invitations to disown the causeway went much deeper than political positioning or an either-or preference among economic development strategies. In the first part, his commitment to the causeway was a matter of legal logic, differentiating between a constitutional obligation and a federal-provincial agreement. More fundamentally, the fixed crossing was about Prince Edward Island's place in the world and about its essential vulnerability. For Campbell, PEI's self-sufficiency required a reliable connection to the rest of Canada and the world, and that was non-negotiable. The federal government underestimated the depth of Alex Campbell's commitment, or simply failed to understand it. To Ottawa, these were fungible dollars in times of across-the-board austerity. To Alex Campbell, the link between Prince Edward Island and the mainland was a constitutional commitment that underpinned the relationship between PEI and Canada. In his comments responding to the federal estimates of February 1969 and their failure to include funding for the fixed crossing, Campbell blasted Ottawa, saying that the decision left him to wonder where Prince Edward Island fits in the federal scheme of things. Campbell went on to say, "It is the action of the federal government and not the Constitution which needs reassignment."
Enhanced ferry service.
Between 1968 and 1971, 4 car ferries were added to serve on the crossing between Borden PEI and Cape Tormentine, New Brunswick. The first was the MV John Hamilton Gray, with capacity to carry 190 vehicles and 1,000 passengers. The John Hamilton Gray was inaugurated in October 1968, just 2 days before the big public hearing that launched the Causeway Crusade. Alex Campbell drew an appreciative round of applause from the crowd at the inauguration when he commented that, although the new ship was badly needed and greatly appreciated, he was tempted to give it the nickname MV Meantime, looking forward to the day when the causeway would be in place and the John Hamilton Gray could move to the run between Sydney, Nova Scotia and Newfoundland. In 1969, the Lucy Maud Montgomery was introduced, to be followed in 1971 by the Holiday Island and the Vacation Land. These new car ferries joined the Abaquet and the John Hamilton Gray to add considerable capacity, notably to carry growing volumes of summer visitor traffic. There was even consideration given to introducing a hovercraft ferry. On the run between Wood Islands, PEI, and Caribou, Nova Scotia, the Prince Edward was introduced in 1972 and the Confederation in 1975. By 1972, with a total of 73 crossings daily at peak season, the frustrations of waiting for the ferry were reduced, but not eliminated.
1973 ferry strike and litigation.
In late August 1973, Prince Edward Island suffered a repeat of the ferry strike of the summer of 1966, only this time it was twice as long. From August 21st to September 2nd, there was a 10-day work stoppage on the CN service between Borden and Cape Tormentine, interrupting late-season tourist traffic and undercutting PEI's claim to be the place to be in 73 in celebration of the province's centennial year. Premier Campbell engaged a team of PEI and Ottawa lawyers to consider suing the federal government for its failure to live up to the term of Confederation promising continuous communication. Campbell wrote to Prime Minister Trudeau on August 31st, while the strike was still on, to say that while it was his firm belief that under ordinary circumstances constitutional disputes are best resolved through federal-provincial negotiations, he had reached the reluctant view that nothing short of legal proceedings can now restore our constitutional right to efficient and continuous ferry service. Ironically, the Federal Minister of Transport was Campbell's old sparring partner, Jean Marchand. Campbell explained in his letter to Trudeau, "The obvious dilemma was clearly exposed in a telephone conversation prior to the present curtailment of service with the Minister of Transport, the Honourable Jean Marchand. On the one hand, the province believes that there is a federal constitutional obligation to provide continuous service, and on the other hand, your government has been loath to interfere with the negotiating process, which itself provides the legal right to interrupt and stop the provision of this service." Campbell closed by saying that, although the claim was for a monetary loss, the expectation of the province is that this action will promote serious and successful deliberations between our governments to prevent the recurrence of the present situation. The province's initial legal opinion was that it would be dangerous to sue the federal government. Lawyer Joe Giz advised that there was a real possibility that the province would lose, and thereby lose whatever bargaining power it has on purely political grounds. By this time, both Premier Campbell and Andy Wells were actively involved, and provincial officials asked Giz to retain outside counsel. As Campbell saw it, the federal government had not acted on an array of Prince Edward Island's suggestions, notably to separate the ferry service from CN's general operations, and litigation was the only recourse left available to the province to at least save face. Ottawa lawyers John M. Coyne QC and D. Gordon Blair QC took a more favorable view of the potential outcome of litigation, and in early September 1973, Giz filed a statement of claim in the Federal Court of Canada. Prince Edward Island achieved a substantial victory when Justice Catnach of the Trial Division concluded in a January 1976 ruling that the federal government had a legal duty to maintain the ferry service, and that the stoppage due to the ferry workers' strike was in breach of that duty. The court concluded that the province could not sue for damages, but would have to settle for a declaration that its rights had been violated. The federal government appealed to the Federal Court of Appeal, which in a December 1977 ruling found wholly in Prince Edward Island's favor, concluding that there was a legal obligation to provide the service, that the CN strike constituted a breach of the federal government's constitutional duty, and that the province was entitled to seek financial compensation for a failure to provide the service. These holdings changed the tenor of subsequent telephone conversations between Alex Campbell and the Federal Minister of Transport, a role assumed by Otto Lang in September 1975. They also changed other negotiations between Prince Edward Island and the federal government regarding continuous communication. CN Marine was created in 1977 as a Crown Corporation subsidiary of Canadian National. The new Crown Corporation was headquartered in Moncton, bringing together the operations of constitutionally mandated East Coast ferry services between Borden and Cape Tormentine, as well as between Portobasque, Newfoundland and North Sydney, Nova Scotia. Among other advantages, the creation of CN Marine segregated industrial relations on the ferries from CN's other operations.
Postlude.
The court decisions in PEI's favor helped to create the impetus for the federal government to reopen the fixed crossing file in the 1980s. Following much planning and analysis, negotiation and design, plus a hotly debated plebiscite to determine whether Prince Edward Islanders actually wanted it, the Fixed Link Crossing, or Confederation Bridge as it would be known, was opened to the public in June of 1997. It would go on to be identified as one of the leading engineering projects of the 20th century. The Confederation Bridge benefited from more than a decade of studies, design work, environmental assessments, and new technologies. It had the advantage of expertise in geospatial positioning, highly specialized concrete, and other new construction techniques. By the 1990s, knowledge of the natural environment, notably with regard to the tidal and ice conditions in the Northumberland Strait, provided a much different context. When the expertise and capabilities that went into the bridge built in the 1990s are contrasted with what was available in the 1960s, most observers would concede that the proposed Northumberland Strait crossing of the mid-1960s would have been a very risky undertaking in both environmental and engineering terms. In 1998, after the Confederation Bridge had been completed and operating for a year, Alex Campbell would tell New Brunswick journalist Jacques Poitras, "It's a good thing the 1960s crossing project didn't go anywhere, because the construction of a causeway or part causeway would have been an environmental disaster for the region. I don't think we ever imagined the impact it would cause and the extent of damage that might have occurred. From every possible angle, it was a disaster waiting to happen. There was no consideration given to the environment. There was no compensation scheme for environmental degradation. There was no compensation for fishermen. Back in those days, governments just went ahead and did things." Asked how he voted in the 1988 plebiscite to gauge PEI public support for the fixed link crossing, Campbell responded, "I voted for the fixed link, but held serious doubts about the hyped benefits of the bridge, such as the reduction in the price of goods due to the savings in transportation costs. I also had concerns regarding the impact on the University of Prince Edward Island and on island car dealerships, which have since proved to be wrong." When it came time to choose a name for the new fixed link, Alex Campbell, by then a justice of the PEI Supreme Court, was asked to chair the panel. After considering hundreds of submissions, Campbell's committee recommended the name Abiquit Crossing, referring to the original and affectionate Mi'kmaq name for the island, meaning cradled on the waves. The federal government did not accept the recommendation, preferring the name Confederation Bridge. This was not the first time that Alex Campbell had his advice and sense of place overridden by perceived national interests. However ardently or furiously Alex Campbell fought to secure the constitutional promise of continuous communication, and however frustrated he may have been in the face of incomprehension or tight-fistedness of the federal government, Campbell never lost his sense of humor. When asked at the time he stepped down as premier in 1978 about his future job prospects, Campbell responded that he'd like to be employed as a ticket vendor on the PEI Causeway.